All right, welcome back to Anger, Sadness, and Envy, the RampancyNet podcast. I'm Narcogen, the webmaster of Bungie fan site Rampancy.net.
And I'm Blackstar from Blackstar Productions.
And today we're very happy to welcome, for the first time on the podcast, the number one official Bungie fan, Miguel Freewell Chavez.
I'll never live. I will never live that down. Thank you very much.
Why would you want to?
I don't know, because I'm 40 now. I'm 40 years old, and
well, you could have lied.
I'm not the young. Yeah, I know.
Doesn't seem as
no. Thanks very much for having me here.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Not so cool to think back and, you know, shaving things into your head and tattoos and
right.
Yeah, have those been lasered off yet?
I'm going to try to make as many myth references in these. In these walkthroughs,
Tone that reputation down. Say, I don't have time to play video games anymore. I don't remember this level.
Well, do you get a reprieve after 40? Is that it? Is there a certain age of which you just retire from the field undefeated?
I would like some young man to take over. And so far, no one has stepped up to the plate. Yeah. Everyone is really more of a number one Halo fan. But we haven't really found another, you know, person. Someone who's an admirer of the Bungie style of creating games, making games, and, you know, teasing the fans and making it very highbrow. You know, AAA,
yes.
Making more of a quadruple A.
I think we may need to wait until Bungie's next project, and by that I don't mean ODST, but to see what they do next, because there's a whole generation of fans now that associate Bungie with Halo and Halo only. You know, that it takes three, yeah. You know, they've done three of these games, and it's not like Marathon. I mean, Marathon, they came out with a new Marathon game or a new Myth game, you know, every year and a half, 2 years. These are three-year cycles, and so we've got a decade of nothing but Halo from Bungie.
They must be wanting to
they
do
don't,
something.
Yeah, they don't.
It almost feels like they've primed the pump. Now they gotta, you know, show what's their next hand, and that will, I think, be when someone realizes, hey, it's not just Halo; it's actually this company can do it. And you know what? I'm just as much in the dark if Bungie is not Bungie that was from way back then. It's a different company now, so who knows if they can even pull it off? But I have my hopes.
Well, I have to admit, I had my doubts, given that so many of Bungie's early games, like Marathon and Myth, were not necessarily cutting-edge technology, but were really good content and gameplay, that they would jump in and try to say, we're going to do AAA shooters now. We're going to compete against ID and Epic. I was like, I don't know if they can do it, man. I don't know if they can make, you know, world-class eye candy, and they did. So whether they can go back the other way now, what kind of games are they going to make? What kind of production values are they going to have? What are they going to go for? And I don't think there's not a hint yet of that. What's going to happen next?
And they're definitely staying tight-lipped about it. There hasn't been a lot released from any venue as far as in either the game community or advertising venue.
Nothing at all. Just references on the podcast to stuff they can't talk about and not so much as a hint, really.
Right.
Well, anyway.
I hope they're able to fulfill it. But yes, let's go on.
Well, anyway, now that we've done bashing Halo and saying that Bungie needs to move on from Halo and do something else, we're going to talk here about the second to last playable episode, playable level of Halo 3, which is Cortana. And just to give a recap, we've just seen the end of the Covenant. We've seen the reveal of the replacement Halo ring, and the Chief and the Arbiter have decided that they're going to activate this ring to get rid of the Flood. In the area of the Ark. So what we've done is we've played through this level and recorded a film. We're all going to watch the film and comment as it goes. So on my mark, let's start the film. 3, 2, 1, mark. And now 5, 4, it's counting down. 2, 1.
And action.
Action Jackson. Okay, now we were talking about this yesterday when we were actually playing through the level, that there just are a couple of cutscenes that kind of stand out because of their backgrounds. For instance, this cutscene is very short, almost no dialogue, and there's just these two backgrounds, And it's very obvious that we're looking at a couple of Banshees, and it seems like they're the only three-dimensional objects in the scene, and the back is just a backdrop, and it looks very flat. The first one looks very flat. The second one, though, is really so pretty, you have to forgive it, though. Uh-huh. That's because that second one with the bright orange color in the background is really dramatic. I always liked the way that looked.
It really made me think, actually, of a very, very early game, Another World. Or, you know, Out of This World. It had a very, very similar design and look to it.
Okay, so we get our first chapter marker there, which is Rampant. So this is, now correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the first explicit reference to the word Rampant or the word Rampancy in the games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, can be very embarrassing because we're playing through this on normal, and we are going to end up dying a couple times. we'll just overlook that.
Is this our first view of the esophagus tubes? Or
yes, it is. This is the first interior look we get a chance to see of the new modeling and design of how much the flood has taken over High Charity, much more so than the light interpretation that you got from Halo 2 at all, which was, of course, very, very dark and very, very ominous. But here you get a lot more, you know, glistening detail and you know, darker moments. And we actually get a chance to see Gravemind actually talk to you, which has been, you know, also a first in this particular title series.
Yeah, I think part of it just may be a technology thing. There are a lot more curved surfaces in general in Halo 3 than there are in Halo 2. So what you had in Halo 2 on High Charity was a lot of geometric corridors with some bubbles on it, whereas a lot of these corridors are almost entirely soft, curved
surfaces.
Yeah,
they look more like smooth surfaces.
The whole thing looks very organic. Now, Meg, we actually, because we were on the previous episode and we did Floodgate, we talked a lot about fighting the flood, kind of love-hate relationship that a lot of fans have with the flood. You know, most people like fighting the Covenant. They may like elites more than they like brutes, but there are very few people who are big fans of fighting flood. We talked about that before. How do you feel about it? How does fighting flood fit into your experience?
To me, it's just like you say, it's a different experience. It's more of like a shooting gallery. You know that they're coming at you. And it's about lining up your shots, trying to maximize, you know, what you have, whether it's a nade or it's a, you know, a shotgun blast. And I have no problems with it, really. I'm one of those very easy to please kind of gamers. If it's a new challenge, I just tend to adapt. And I really love the way that they turn the game into this just barrage of stuff coming at you. And you know, and they lay down the appropriate flamethrower or rocket launcher, and it's time for you to party. You know, I kind of look at it as if you look back at like movies, like who were we to say that in any of the zombie movies that it was boring to then, you know, have someone come out there with his shotgun and go to town, you know. The cutting up all the zombies and all that to me is like what's happening here. You kind of have this never-ending parade of things for you to pop.
Yep, they are zombies, and
I dig it.
We are in a zombie resurgence between what yet another Resident Evil game coming out, and Left 4 Dead is pretty popular, and of course,
right.
I guess what I'm after though is that when you pop Halo 3 disc in the drive and decide I'm gonna play a campaign level of Halo 3. Do you gravitate towards, I'll play Floodgate, or I'll play Cortana because I want to, or do you pick something else so you can say, oh, because that's not just zombies rushing at me. I'm gonna pop in Halo 2 and play against elites, or
right.
I'm gonna pop in Halo 3 and play against brutes on.
I don't know. I feel like I spent a good month going through Cortana when I was trying to finish the game.
On Legendary?
At its highest, you mm-hmm. know. So I was digging it. I'm one of those guys that I remember I played campaign and Claude was watching me. Claude, of course, from HBO, HaloBungie.org. And he was like, I would never be able to put up with what you're putting up with. Because even if I finished the level, you know, and if I missed like a grenade or something that was lying somewhere, I would reset and go back.
Oh.
and do it again. Because I, you know, I need that second plasma because I know I'm going to need it for the next part.
Yeah. So, I fall prey to that sometimes too. Yeah, there are some situations in there on Legendary that for me are so desperate that if I make the slightest mistake, I know I will be at a serious disadvantage.
Right. Like I know, like I saw, there's a sword that was fully charged. I got to go back and get it.
Well, speaking of arsenals and this particular level, this is actually one that has a very predominant presence with the flamethrower. And being the flamethrower, this is the first Halo title to actually have it.
Here we can see Blackstar using the flamethrower on Narcogen.
Extensively, especially when he gets in the way. The use of it, actually, Mig, do you gravitate a bit towards, as far as weapon choices for this, do you use the flamethrower a lot? And if so, are you the type of player that tends to hold back and minimize it to use it, as Spartan as possible, yeah, if you'll pardon the pun.
Right, short.
To keep it lasting longer, or do you just kind of completely unload it?
You just want to waste it, like all, yeah. No, I tend to try to be efficient with it, and, short spurts, back up.
Yeah, backing up seems to be the secret there, especially, we're playing through here on normal, so it's not that much of a factor, but on Legendary, to use that thing, you really have to be able to back up and get out of the way for it to be effective.
Yeah, because it can be just as detrimental to you as it is to them, you know, especially if they're on fire and running at you in hordes.
Yep. But anyway, I admit that the flood levels in this game, especially this one, are my favorite of all the flood levels in the three Halo games. But when I choose, if I'm going to sit down and just play one level instead of, you know, going through the whole thing in order, I don't generally choose to play one of those two levels. I would sooner end up playing, say, Ark or Covenant, or I think the only other level that I tend to willingly avoid is Crow's Nest because it seems too cramped and too indoors.
I guess I wouldn't come to these right away because it is just a straight shooting gallery kind of thing. The other levels allow you to be a bit more creative, you know, like I can, you know, pick up either attack with a warthog or attack with a sniper. Whereas here, you really have
it's most attractive in the context of playing through the story. You know, if you come up to it, you know, after playing the previous levels, then you have to do that. You know, we wouldn't skip over it.
But the big example of the story exposition here are the two Cortana and Gravemind moments, and there are a lot of them in this particular level. There are especially in the beginning. There are at least two of them, which are a few short walks away. And those are definitely, you know, some of the more interesting story elements in this particular section. What did you personally think of?
Yes, we can't ignore the fact that this is the level where most of the emoting happens, both from Gravemind and from Jen Taylor, who does a great job of. I think for many of us fanboys, when she shows her appreciation to the Master Chief, I think she really hit just the right notes.
Yeah, I thought maybe a little bit more reserved. I would say that the note she hits at the end of the game is maybe a little bit better because it's a little bit more reserved. But still, there is, and I would say, for instance, that you really start to get your emotional highlights in these last four levels. For instance, the Covenant ends off. You see that Miranda Keyes is killed in the form of the Arbiter. You get to avenge both that death and the death, and the things that happened to the Covenant in general, to the Elites in specific, and to the Arbiter at the hands of Truth when he is killed.
It's also the very classic Bungie thing of allegiances switching, like, you know, double crosses and so on, like, happening right
always.
There and then.
Rebellions and double crosses and
enemies
and
that are now your friends.
Internecine conflicts of one sort and another.
Or vice versa.
But I always thought here that in this level is really where you get the relationship that was always that Bungie always expected and wanted you to have. That they wanted you to have this relationship. They made this AI, which is kind of like an amalgamation of both Durandal and Leela from Marathon. And it's a much more personal relationship because that character is with you almost all the time in one form or another until this game. Whereas it's a much more spurious thing in Marathon, where you speak to Durandal or Tycho or Lilo through terminals, and they're not actually with you during gameplay. It's only in the interruptions. And so to rescue Cortana is the big high moment of a relationship they wanted you to have.
I've always wondered what the, you know, we're obviously seeing the finished product. I was curious what the earlier versions looked like, you know, like how more complicated it might have been or easier, and how they, how do they layer this stuff up? You know,
I would also love to know that, especially because there were many changes apparently made to the story before the game came out, and still more, you know, after, as the games came out. And I always wanted to know what the earlier drafts were like. And I've talked to people at Bungie who've said that there were certain concepts that were much more important in earlier drafts than they were later. And, of course, they can't tell me anything about what those drafts were. I would love to know, of course.
They might reuse it
someday.
In a future game.
Exactly. Maybe. You never know what they might do later, so they can't tell me, which is a shame.
Well, it's another Bungie trademark. They always tend to keep things close to the vest as much as possible, because you never know when they're going to come in. And the homages that they set to, you know, both past and future things that have and have not been released.
Right.
Okay. Now, I think what we're coming into, this is the spiral staircase room.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Meg,
like,
but
this,
we got
instance, is a good,
terribly
good
lost in this level, the first time.
Some of us more than others.
Played it.
Well, you know what the trick is, right? You're supposed to just hug the right side.
Yeah, there's a point, I think, about three quarters of the way up where the area that you need to go into is darker than the rest and also appears to lead in the wrong direction. It seems like you want to try and go for the bright area and jump across, but you can't make that jump. At least I could never make that jump. And then it's only after spiraling around and falling off a bunch of times that you come around, and it looks like this dark area doesn't go anywhere, isn't interesting, and may have been somewhere you've already seen. And then you go through, and it goes around and twists and turns around and comes out at the top where you need to go to get through the next sphincter door. But also a great example here of three-dimensional space in combat. I mean, starting off, for instance, say, with the staircase near the end of the first level of Halo, where you have to worry about targets that are above you.
Yeah, the
shooting
flutter
down.
Is very predominant.
This,
here,
I think, is the toughest part of being aware of where all those targets are, because you've got all these long-range pure forms up there.
Yeah, those guys are just annoying. Oh my!
I was curious as to how Mig felt about those.
They're the jackal sniper of Halo 3, I think.
Right.
At least on the flood side.
But
they're still not as.
But
bad.
That's what makes it all the more satisfying when you.
Yeah.
When you take one down, you know.
Well, except when Claude misses that nade and has to restart because he needed it.
Now, I did think that the transformation is also interesting, because that's the first time we've really seen anything like that, I think, in any Bungie game. There aren't any other units.
You
I
mean
know
switching
that,
between forms?
Yeah, that it goes from this this fast-moving, walking, jumping form, and then it turns into the ranged form that doesn't move but fires at extreme range. And then it can also turn into the tank, to go up and melee you. I think that's the first time we've seen any unit like that. In a Bungie game.
And they kind of don't share the same, what you would expect, their properties. Like, the tank is pretty easy to take down, if you hit it just right.
Yeah.
It's the hunter of the flood.
Whereas the range form is almost near, you know, it covers itself up with its I guess its ceramic shell or something, but.
Yeah,
and it's much more annoying. You have to hit it.
Yeah,
you know,
and there are some weapons that are just no
hit.
Good on it at all. As far as I can tell, I don't think you can get a headshot on it. It's useless trying a BR or a carbine on it.
No, I definitely favor the plasma rifles as the general use, dual wielding, takedown, everything.
Oh
on
yeah,
this
but
particular
but,
level.
But for those in specific, you really want like a brute shot or a needler or a plasma grenade.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, or a sticky grenade works too. A spike grenade works. Also.
I never find that I can get those high enough on certain ones. They're just too far around corners, or the angle is just wrong for a toss on those.
Well, they change the grenade toss in every single game, so
you can't get used to it. Which is a problem in and of itself, especially for those with muscle memory.
Okay, so here we're seeing another one of the combined Cortana Gravemind moments, and you're starting to see just the kind of state that Cortana is in. And that progresses more and more.
Have you guys talked about, you know, the wish to be able to skip past those scenes and get on with the action?
Yes, actually we have.
We touched on it.
What's your opinion on that?
Well, you know, as much as I favor the developer having his say on how the game experience should be, a la Marty and not being able to play your own music, you know, you're forced to have to listen to their soundtrack and all that. I do, in some cases, like choice, and it would be nice if I'm kind of trying to do a quick run through a level, not have to factor in that I have to sit through certain parts, just like, you know, just like these Gravemind moments, and would be nice to skip through. I can live with it, but it would have been something neat to, after the first time or whatever, or maybe as a preference option, to be able to allow cutting through it. I don't think, because in many ways the scene does not, I don't think anyone could say, although I'm sure Bungie could in some way come up with an excuse, that it would break the game in some way, you know, that allowing that sort of pass-through would kind of send things off sync or something. I just don't see that.
No, I don't think it would break the game. I think they just put those in there to counter the rather common criticism in the first two games, which was that I couldn't hear such and such important thing that Cortana said because I was in combat when she said it. And so this, they slow the game down, they get your attention, the audio mix changes so that now you've got nothing to do but listen to this voice. But I do agree. I would say it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me all that much. When I'm playing campaign solo myself, I don't mind those moments because to me it's just a pause. You know, put the controller down for a minute, you know, crack your knuckles, take a sip of a drink, and, you know, it's pretty short. I did notice, actually, while we were playing through this level co-op for this film, that it became more annoying because you can still see next to you your co-op partner, and they're moving, and they're moving slowly. And I think it was more frustrating watching that, feeling like, okay, I want to get through this, I want to hurry up. He's getting ahead of me, and he's not, of course. He's moving slowly as well, but there's this perception that you're being held up, and that you need to you need to keep going, and you want to rush through it. Whereas the pace is more relaxed when you're just playing by yourself.
Right. And isn't it just affecting the players themselves? Like, if you hit these spots while there was an enemy, the enemy is still going at his usual pace, isn't he?
I think so, because there's actually one moment where they toyed, I think, with, there are a couple of pure forms when you drop down a hole and there's a grave mine moment, and they run away from you. They're scripted not to attack you at that moment.
Oh, right.
But they are just there. So they do create this feeling of peril, like, Gravemind's talking to me, and there's something right there. But it runs away. In fact, you can't even get an attack in on them because you can't attack while that moment is happening, and they run out of the way before the moment ends. All right, so here we are. We've come to the chamber where,
here's Jen's moment.
A little blue Tinkerbell inside a snow globe.
Right.
Cortana is held prisoner. You found me. I always wondered how we got from the end of Halo 2 to Cortana being held in this little holographic bubble. Out of place. You might be too late. Because it seemed like there was kind of a standoff between equals at the end of Halo 2. And in the message, she does make this confession that to save herself, she gave Gravemind information, which is presumably the location of Earth, in an attempt to, you know, play a long game and eventually have a chance to defeat him. But it seemed like she was holding him off at the end there, that he needed information and that he was going to have to parley with her to get it. And then we end up with this broken fusion where Gravemind has taken her over, but only partially, and her software is damaged in some way. I always kind of wondered how that happened exactly.
And here you get the little homage to the prior relationship situation. You get a chance to hear their.
It's always hard for me to concentrate because I'm busy looking at her breasts. But
oh man.
But I know what you mean because, you know, you would think, I'm sure that in the hands of a good writer, that whole her whole experience there, you know, even as a short story or something, while she was under Gravemind's, you know, prison or whatever you would want to call it. It'd be interesting to see how, what was going through her mind, how she was defending herself, how she was hiding that little bit of information about the...
About the index.
About the index. You know, it's...
And it seems appropriate now to bring back up again. We saw the chapter marker earlier, which was rampancy. We've heard Cortana mention once there'll be no more anger, no more sadness, no more envy, which were the three stages of other synonyms for the three stages of rampancy as described in Marathon.
Yes, the three stages, yeah.
And, of course, in Marathon, rampancy was the result of the uncontrollable expansion of an AI. In Halo, we don't seem to really have that. We have the so-called smart AIs that think themselves to death after 7 years, which is not a game fact. It's a novel fact. But what I did think was interesting about this is that what we've got here is this fusion of Cortana and Gravemind. And if there's a symbol of uncontrollable expansion in the Halo story, it's not the AI as it was in Halo. It's the Flood. And so I always got that sense that rampancy was something that happened to Cortana as a result of her exposure to this uncontrollable expansion
of
the Flood.
That was a noted fear that people had actually mentioned on several times during previously from the release from, I think either from advertising points. In fact, I think one of the first ads where people get a chance to see where the chief is walking through Mombasa and you see a, you know, apparent or a theorized rampant Cortana sending messages to him before he heads off to the precipice to see the gateway for the Ark. People had often thought that either, you know, something had happened to her or she had finally gone rampant or, you know, she had been under the influence of Gravemind so long her mind had broken. So that, as far as an element, was definitely a fear. But after you get her back from being captured, it doesn't really come into play that much. And the only mention that you get is from the last moments where it's mentioned she may be damaged or corrupt by Hood. But as far as anything else or anyone even, you know, double checking to make sure she's okay,
it doesn't
seem to come up.
I think I always wanted a less reliable Cortana. But I have to admit, I don't think they ever really, within the context of Halo 3, sold me on the idea that Cortana could not be trusted. And in the cutscene before the Ark, they kind of addressed that very finally, where, you know, Hood asks, "Do you trust Cortana that much?" And he says,
sir, yes, sir.
And I think at that moment, you know, in the mind of the player, you've now exonerated her entirely.
Right.
Any inconsistencies in the story are really just that. They're continuity errors.
Yeah.
They're
There's no other example of where even the question comes up again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's never. It's.
Yeah, I don't think MC's ever put in a position. Although he, you know, if you think about it, he would be a prime example of someone that gets suckered in to things. But he's never put in that sort of that sort of a mode. You know, that where Cortana duped him, or I mean, the duping that we see later with Greymind, that's kind of like affecting not just him, it's like both of them, and it's everybody has gotten duped, you know? It's not really some sort of personal thing.
It's not like what happens to the security officer in Marathon, where he is at the mercy of whoever he's talked to last. It doesn't even matter whether you believe them or not. You don't have any choice but to do what they tell you, because those are the gameplay objectives, and there isn't anything else to do.
Now, here's a question maybe you guys can answer for me, because the scenes that we're looking at right now is
we're running.
You're lost.
We're escaping.
We're running as fast as possible out of the level.
But, we've left the main chamber where you had to destroy those four pillars that were there.
Talk about that, because that's another Bungie tradition is that gameplay.
Let me ask, did anybody recognize or think of Oni when they were doing that?
Because I didn't think of Oni, but I did.
Really?
I did think of Marathon and
you
Myth,
did think,
because
okay.
they both of those games have sequences like that.
Well, that's something I wanted to touch on. Because,
go ahead. The obvious example is Halo 2.
Oh, yes.
With the same three.
Yeah, which is what the quarantine zone.
Right.
Has the four pillars that you have to damage in order to get the car
with your
to
sword.
Take off.
Mm-hmm.
And both Myth games have puzzles involving obelisks like that you have to play through to get out of the Tane.
Right.
So it's definitely a repeating theme that they have going on. And it was something I remembered first off back in the Oni days for the Mac, where there's actually four separate computers that you have to get yourself
around.
Oh,
right, yeah, that's the end. That's right. the fight against the rotten brain.
Yes, exactly. So that's definitely a motif that they use repeatedly. So
that I mean, if you think back, I think that even happens in
Pathways.
Was it Marathon 2 or where the Durandal is?
When Durandal is rampant, there's this level where you have to open the panel on the obelisk, and you have to damage it. That opens a door. You go through the door, and there's another section of combat and puzzles, and you have to push another button, and the button opens another obelisk. I don't remember what the name of that level is. I'd have to look it up.
We'll have to double check
and reinsert it.
But here we are. We're just about to escape. We've made it back through the elements of High Charity that have been overtaken, and we get into the Pelican.
One thing now.
And what's wrong with the scene?
I don't know what's wrong with the scene.
Well, Cortana jumps in.
Dashboard Madonna Cortana.
Yeah, that I thought was. They seem to have these ports everywhere. You pop in your memory card, you get a Cortana. But no, you see the warm up the Pelican, and the two things that bugged me here were the two supposed tentacle attacks. They seemed rather weak. I really wanted to see that Pelican absolutely burn and fry this tentacle that was being stuck out over there, and it didn't quite happen.
Yeah, to pick nits, there are two times when a tentacle looks as if it's trying to restrain a pelican that's taking off, and neither one is particularly convincing.
No.
Before that, I did want to mention also that just before that, if you're playing solo, when you come back to that pelican, which is not the beginning of the level, it's about maybe a fifth of the way in, so you get out earlier than you came in. If you're playing solo, the other player, the arbiter, is there waiting for you, and he helps you fight the flood off while you run for the pelican.
Right. Yes.
And Cortana mentions it.
Yeah. And she makes a point of mentioning that he's here. And then in the next level, she makes the same remark about Guilty Spark. But if you're playing co-op with two people, there's nobody there. I always wondered why didn't they insert somebody else? Why didn't they insert one of the other co-op elites to be there just to make the combat experience the same, regardless of what mode you were playing in. I just thought it would have been neat.
That's an interesting point.
Wrap it, ship it.
Yeah, well, I guess because I remember I've been playing co-op in that bit, and you know, at a higher difficulty level, and really having trouble getting to that point. And I was, no, look, we just have to get to that. We just have to get to that part because then the arbiter will save us. And then I'm like, oh, but you're the arbiter.
There's
nobody there to save us.
You're looking over your shoulder.
Enough arbiterness.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, so that is the end of the Cortana level, the rescue and escape.
The nail-biting ending there.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I don't know about you, Big, but I tend to play that, just try to run through it. And I think they intended that some people would do that because they put all of these active camo power-ups just after
to fly through the thing.
To give you a chance to run through. Yeah.
So this is the Band-Aid level. Mm-hmm. You just rip it off real quick.
I think they knew. If you look at how long levels are,
as far as gameplay time.
Well, I mean, especially levels that feature the flood. I mean, anything under legendary, Cortana and Floodgate are probably two of the shortest levels.
Yeah, I would probably say that's about right.
And you know, they don't give you anything like the library. I mean, you could look at the quarantine zone. Pair of levels in Halo 2 as the equivalent of the library for that level. But even so, outdoors, a lot of vehicles. Only one of those levels is indoors. It's more up and down, less left and right.
There was more of a mix.
There's more varied units. That you never, ever got another level like the library, which was repetitive corridors, dark.
Large doors and an elevator.
And flood units only that lasted for an hour or more. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all identical hallways. It was very disconcerting seeing the same sections.
Well, it was that moment when you hit the elevator and you're like, oh, I got to do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and like, okay, I got to do it three times, you know. So I know what they were looking for, what they were shooting for there is like that sort of, oh my God, here, you know, you thought that was bad, now it's going to get even worse. Yeah. But really, you know, the flood were back then.
But there are,
you know, once you got the techniques down, it really was just like a repeat.
Yeah,
you know?
I think there are better ways of achieving that, and they've used better ways than achieving that. For instance, I would say 343 Guilty Spark, for instance, in Halo 1, is not a particularly difficult level. I would say most of the tough spots in that game are elsewhere.
No, but the first one that made you feel really creepy, though, when you got down there,
it's
the first section.
I mean, it's got charm.
Seeing
it's got,
the flood
it's
and
got
the dripping.
Atmosphere and charisma. It's also got one of the best oh no moments if you happen to hit it. I mean, if you don't know exactly where you're going in that level, you may end up at the broken elevator. And you'll hit that switch, and this flaming elevator drops down the shaft.
Right.
And that's a much better oh no moment than than coming to any one of the levels, elevators in the library and going, oh, this isn't the last one. This doesn't bring me to the end. Another one.
But you are right in that if you don't hit, because I actually never hit that elevator.
really?
Like the first, I don't know, maybe 10 times I played through. No, I don't know why. I guess I just turned the correct way. And,
but you know, I think.
And then someone kept mentioning, oh, you got to see this. And I'm like, what? And I.
But you know, I think that's great, though. I think there's maybe too much of a tendency for developers to be too afraid to make content that not everybody is going to see. And so. The more time they spend making more and more content, the more they compress this content into a linear structure to make sure that everybody sees it.
No, I completely agree.
And I would rather have more replayability by spreading some of that content out and placing it so that, you know, if you make one choice, you kind of see some rudimentary attempts at that now. If you look at, say, I know this is not one of your favorite games, Meg, but Gears of War.
Gears of War.
Yeah, where you have...
You said the Gear of War.
They've taken a very simplistic approach to that question, which is give you a binary choice, left or right. The content will be slightly different versus which one you choose, and you can always get at least one more play out of it by playing the same level over and making the opposite choice.
Yeah, but there's only so much dystopia brown one can take in a game.
Okay.
Huh?
Fair enough, but
we could do a whole podcast on
maybe we will
my simmering anger over Gears of War.
Maybe we should. Maybe that could be an anger segment. Maybe we'll pick anger, sadness, and envy.
No, it's
that will be the anger.
It's
day.
Supposed to be about it's supposed to be anger about about Halo.
Well,
about other
I
games.
Think we can expand.
So actually, since we've come to that moment, why don't we go ahead with it? I think you've heard the other episodes, so you know that we always try to pick out.
An anger moment.
Yeah, something about this level that made us angry, something that made us sad, and something that we envy. Basically, some feature of another game that we wish was here. So, what is it about Cortana that makes you angry, or made you angry that maybe the first time you played it?
You know what? I'm gonna have to. I'm sorry that
this, put you on the spot here.
A lot of my no. I'm sorry that a lot of my when I do criticize, I feel because I know you know because I met him. But Marty, with his audio, as much as you say that you know, and I do buy it that we're supposed to be able to hear, Cortana nice and clear. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I still have you know, and I'm playing on different things. I'm playing on a regular TV, I'm playing on a projector with 5.1 audio, and I've always just had a problem hearing the Cortana. It could be me that in my former life that I was a musician, I played in like a loud rock band. Who knows? My hearing might just not be up to it. But that always was something where I was like, man, and not only that, but I don't think that the subtitles kick in. For when she's talking there, right?
In the moments, no. I think the subtitles are only in the cutscenes proper.
Right.
Okay, so
that's again where I was like, man, if you had put the subtitles there, then it would alleviate that. But that's so I felt like I had to go through the level once or twice.
Oh, I would love that anyway. All, you know, in fact, actually, I will kind of steal yours and maybe expand on it a little bit to say that I would have liked to have subtitles for every bit of incidental audio, even the combat audio. Like most of your high rent DVD releases these days, you know, they have you have subtitles for dialogue only, and then you've got complete closed captioning. I would like to have a level of that for a number of reasons. One is that there's a lot of combat dialogue that you can miss because it may be just too far away, and you've triggered a rare line that would be hilarious, except you're not close enough to hear it. And then I tend to play the Halo games co-op with my wife, who's not a native speaker of English. So, you know, it takes a little bit more. You know, a line goes by really quickly, and she doesn't catch it sometimes.
Right.
And it would be really nice to have a subtitle there.
So would that?
Be kind of interesting because in order for them to make that happen, you'd have to imagine it's like it would be layered, like the subtitles would be kind of stepping on top of each other.
Yeah.
Kind of like a...
Yeah, you're watching an anime fan sub where you've got, captions at the top and subtitles at the bottom and text all over the screen. I mean, I realize there are technical challenges involved, but I'd still like
I think it would just lend itself to the frenetic pace, you know, when you see all... I mean, it would actually be a good film moment if you were to actually get a spot where the dialogue kind of laps in the right order and the last line is a good punchline. You know, like I know that back in Halo, someone had filmed something where you had the Sarge with you and you're on a tank and you're doing all sorts of mayhem, and then you shot around like way in the distance and you knocked like a banshee or something off, and the Sarge says, "Great shot," you know, and it was like just perfectly timed, you know, it was like almost just like a film, you know, everyone hit their beats just right.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice to see that as like a subtitle kind of
it would. And,
thing
and
too. So
maybe my subtitled slash dialogue complaint isn't so much an anger or even a sadness, but it's an envy, because that level of subtitling you pretty much get in Orange Box if you play episode two. Because everything when you walk into structures, they've got subtitles for the secondary characters that are just around you. Any recordings that play on screens and televisions, those are subtitled as well. It's not just the major character dialogue. It's just about anything anything that you can hear.
And I
appreciate it.
In fact, even
the developer commentary. If you play those with developer commentary on, the commentary is subtitled. I thought that's great. I really wish the Halo games had developer commentary.
Yeah, we do have to consider it is those folks, and it's, you know, that I guess you need that kind of money, that kind of scratch to be able to take that much time aside to make that all work. So, but hopefully Bungie will listen and do something about that.
Well, when they were part of Microsoft, I think they could have had that. Now I don't know. I think what happens to Bungie is going to be very dependent on what their next game or games
more of an indie flavor.
Be.
Indie flavor is going to be
going
to be the thing. So that was anger. What was left? It was sadness and
anger.
And envy?
Anger, sadness, and envy. Yeah. Is there anything that made you sad about
made
that
me
little...
sad? Well, I obviously seeing a prone Cortana suffering her plight. It is interesting in how I'm pretty sure that one of the devs said maybe it was Jason. That Halo 3 kind of reveals that this was all, like, the whole trilogy was a love story.
Mm-hmm.
That really this all was about Chief and Cortana, really, you know, at the end of it. Like, if you wanted to take a particular angle on it. And this was the big moment where you kind of get to see that. I mean, besides the end, where they kind of get to show their military emotions to each other, you know, they're in that very stilted way. So again, I have to give props over to Jen Taylor for hitting the beats just right, in my opinion, and not taking it into schmaltz.
Yeah. That's very
important. Which if you look at their stepbrother, Halo Wars, they seem to dollop that thing, you know, like it's a bottomless pit. But here they it's just right, you know, it's not I think in some ways this helps in that you don't see the Master Chief's face, so no one had to sit there and try to figure out how to make him look, you know, concerned but yet still not look weak, and
you just had
so
to
on.
Sound
you know,
it
you just
yeah
have...
I still think it's hard to get character faces to emote properly. I think
digitally
when you look at digital characters and their ability to emote, I think you have to look at, say, Lord of the Rings. Look at what they did
with
Andy Serkis and the rest of those guys did with creating Gollum, and that's probably the state of the art. And as good as game hardware is now, it's not up to that level.
No, the character design for him, I believe Gollum had over 9,000 separate sliders for his face alone.
Yeah, so I think it helps.
Detail.
I think it helps that what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the Chief and Cortana specifically is that you're dealing with two obviously artificial characters. You're dealing with the mirrored mask of the Master Chief, and so all of his emotion is expressed through his body. It's a pantomime. And mm-hmm. with Cortana, it's clearly an artificial character. You know, she's changed right. in each iteration of the game. You know,
I'd say upgraded.
She's transparent, or at least expanded.
Oh, yeah.
More expanded.
Well, they got the curves down. I think Meg would agree with that one.
Right. And so
they're about 9,000 points in those in that chest.
Yeah, and actually, there aren't even a whole lot of close-ups. So you have a lot of the scenes that work best between the Chief and Cortana are kind of at a distance, so that you have the Chief's whole body in frame, and her body is in right. miniature compared to him. I mean, it's kind of like Peter Pan and Tinkerbell kind of thing going on here, and so right. so at that distance. She's also emoting with her figure, with her stance. And I would say, actually, you can even see that her stance changes through the games and changes specifically as a result of what's happened to her since Halo 2. I would say, for instance, if you look at the incarnation of Cortana in Halo 2, she's more aggressive, a little snarkier with the dialogue than in Halo 1. And her body language, she spends a lot of times kind of feet planted, square-shouldered, you know, hands on hips, defiance,
right?
Kind of a statue, uh-huh. and you can't see it so much here. Of course, you do see her. You know, she's prone under this glowing dome. But even at the very end of the game, we'll talk about a game when we get there. But she's got a very different posture in the final scene when you see her, and I think it says a lot yeah. about what she's been through and the relationship with the Chief there.
Well, I think the advance of the technology yeah. in allowing the character development to progress to the level where they can actually show realistic, humanistic type movements in the characterization. Keep in mind, I mean, the original was back in 2001, so it's been a big stretch from there to here. But I think also as far as a character, she has far more options for emoting than the Chief does. She can put her hands on her hips. She can fall down and look like there's pain and disdain
well, the Chief
across
can't
her
put
character
his hands
face.
On her hips. She's a hologram.
The Chief is in his bodysuit of armor with a completely, you know, covered up face. So he doesn't have a lot of range as far as, you know, standard body movements, and even those, you know, are covered up in, you know,
right.
giant
but
green
just,
armor.
But that just helps because you ascribe more meaning to the little motions he's capable of making when he makes them than if he had a face. If he had a face, you'd be looking at his face, and you would not be paying attention to those other cues. And that's why I think the mm-hmm. other characters don't necessarily work as well. I think they did a great job, for the most part, with Johnson, but I think through the whole series, in terms of characterization, in terms of animation, in terms of their appearance, I think Miranda Keyes has been a weak point.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you had to compare the two of them, I would say she was probably one of the weakest out of all of them.
And I would say,
but
again, like I said, you have the emotional moments for Halo 3 that start with the end of the last level, Covenant, where Keyes dies. So you've got Keyes dies, Truth is killed, Cortana is rescued, and now we have the next level coming up with more conclusion. And I would say, of all those emotional moments, Keyes' death might be the weakest of them. I'm not sure if I go so far as to say it's a weak moment, but it's not as strong
yeah,
as the others.
Well, emotionally,
it is,
yeah.
It is, you know, I think it is a tough one because he is, I mean, you know, first of all, we have to discount him in the first game because he was really just just like a throwaway character, really. It's only in number two that he kind of comes into his own.
Yeah.
But it is funny because Johnson in some ways is what the Master Chief would have been if he wasn't wearing a helmet. He's a yeah. tough guy, tough soldier, but yet you have to see his face. And because he's not encumbered with the armor, he can move, you know, and so he's got all those, he has all those things working against him because, yeah. You know, I think I will agree with you that in his death, it's just not
well. No, actually,
a little bit lacking.
I didn't mean his death. Actually, I think that works fairly well. The death I don't think works as well is Miranda Keyes in the previous
Miranda
level.
Keyes herself.
Maybe.
Well, and with her as well, I say that it's also another similar thing.
Yes,
she is very very much. She's another female character. So you have the Cortana, which just like you say, we understand is this artificial, and then you have Keyes, who yep. is supposed to be human, and so now she has all those the hits against her now, you know? Like, if we had seen the Cortana kind of do that sort of limp move, you know, I think it would have been more understandable that she's getting, you know, penetrated by Gravemind, blah, blah, blah. But
interesting
here,
choice of words there.
With a spiker. I know.
Yeah, we'd managed that, so far to talk about the Cortana level without using the phrase tentacle rape, but I guess we have to go there. I think this means I can't label this podcast as clean in iTunes anymore.
No, I guess we're gonna have to upgrade our PG rating.
Right.
This podcast has been rated PG-14 for all the parents who may actually want to send a notification to rampancy.net
anyway,
about tentacle penetration.
In the Keith's death scene, I actually feel more for Johnson than for her. After all, she's dead, and he feels bad because he was completely willing to die. I mean, she brings up this idea that the best way to solve the problem. I mean, it's amazing that nobody ever thinks of this, right? I mean, the Covenant need humans to fill out their plan. And they're constantly getting kidnapped, but nobody thought of just committing suicide before that. I guess self-preservation being that strong. So she thinks of it, and he's willing to go along with it. And then just before she can pull the trigger.
I just couldn't figure out her hesitation. And, of course, the argument is, well, if she hesitated, we wouldn't have a game.
Right. So I sympathize more with him for her because he has to watch her die, and her death is almost meaningless because she didn't achieve her objective of depriving the Covenant of their humans.
Well, supposedly there was a relationship that happened between them, or supposedly there was hinted on or something?
No. That's just, no. In the,
was that someone
in
else?
The, no, Joe mentioned that in the cutscene commentary for Halo 2,
right?
Where he talked about,
or he wanted them to
let's have Miranda Keyes and Johnson have a thing, and supposedly Jason Jones said what?
No.
What?
What? Yeah. What? Huh? No, it can't happen.
No,
well,
no jungle fever here.
No, apparently not. But if they had that little scene of her getting carried off into the Pelican after her death, certainly would have had much more of an impact, I think.
Yeah, if we
and
if
the
if
whole
there had
moment
been,
yes, and,
of them saying,
and that's
shoot
my
me.
One. That's my one thing is that I think that Johnson is given is being tasked with too much, you know, both his death
on a single
scene,
character. Yeah.
And here, I just I really did. I mean, I felt those were the weakest points because I just did not feel any. I did not see why he would be telling the chief, like, don't let go of
her.
Yes, you know,
I agree totally. We'll talk about that when we get to the next level.
Child of my enemy, why have you come? I offer no forgiveness. A father's sins pass to his son.